was the most difficult part. So I guess it's okay. And I can do this. And hello. And I haven't done a talk here in a very long while. And and there are a lot of you in all of the years that I've been down in Eugene that I don't know, but I'm Shanae, and I practiced here, like Anko said, for over 20 years. And Kyogen was my teacher before going out to Eugene for 8 years. And the talk that I'm giving today, I have lots of talks, but the reason I picked this particular talk is that I really wanted there to be a good reason. What would be the reason that I would come here and give a talk? And I'm talking a lot about this Sambhogakaya realm that I have this tendency towards, and this Sambhogakaya. And this kaya, which means body, and you have the dharma kaya, which is your no mind or vastness or your meditation space. And you have your nirmana kaya, which is the manifest space of your daily life and the place of the historical Buddha. And then you have this kind of funny middle place that I believe we have in some ways lost touch with that is important for our practice, the space there where of actually imagination, of enjoyment, of a place where there is a dissolution of doubt, and this place of that things are, you know, a tree is a tree, but it's not strictly bounded because it also is interconnected and open to constant influence and change. So therefore, it also is not. And I think that far from being open to the Sambhogakaya and the realm of imagination as taking you down off the edge of the earth and falling over, it actually cuts some of the literalism that we have a tendency, all of us have a tendency, especially in areas of habit energy, to be too literal about the realm of existence and too literal about emptiness. And this synthesis that the Sambhogakaya realm represents. And that is kind of my reasoning for doing it. And also to tell you, don't grasp after understanding. Just let the talk kind of drift or, you know, kind of wash over you. I think I have enough handholds to give you good clues, and it will come to you in its own time. So anyway, and time, yes. Okay. Oh, okay. No chance of missing that. Okay. All right. Okay. So, an inner dream expressing a dream. So within the dream expressing the dream, an introduction. This talk is written, and it was written to introduce a class that I did within a dream, expressing the dream, Mutsu Setsumo, which is a title taken from Master Dogen, his 39th fascicle of the Shobogenzo. And through the years, I have not read Dogen with any real passion. Primarily, my contact with his writings was through practicing here at Dharma Rain. But in the past few years, my meditation practice deepened in unexpected ways. And intuitively, I felt I understood Dogen and was drawn to some of the fascicles. And I noticed you are reciting the Avatamsaka. And I did a whole class and talks on the Avatamsaka and Huayan 3 years ago. And the Ocean Mudra, which is another Dogen fascicle, that I felt I understood Dogen, was drawn to some of his fascicles with the Ocean Mudra. I related to the mostly to how the fascicle resonated for me. So with Mutsu Setsumu, I took the time to listen to commentary on Dogen's sources and his particular insights. So now that I'm a teacher, I feel responsible for not only my personal inclinations, but also not leading people astray. So a respect for a structure and fundamentals with Buddhist tradition is vital. So most importantly, I'm answering my own questions in regard to this fascicle, and hopefully to suggest to you your own questions. And this class is underpinned by the fascicle, but it is not, or the talk as well, is not about the fascicle. I'm approaching it from where it was important for me and where I wanted to teach, how I wanted to teach about dreams and the dream before reality, the nightmare before tragedy, fright before the monster, nausea before the fall, and the world is a dream imagined. And doing a class like this had been on my mind for a while, wanting to write about and share my experience and insight into dream, not about the specifics of the night dream, but intimations in regard to the quality and significance of dreaming, of which the night dream is a part. And there also is reverie, a quality of the day dreaming as well. And I didn't want to get caught up in, analyzing dreams. After a while, your dream life and your practice life come together and they kind of act as one. So it was more about, how do we look at dreams and the value of dreams in our practice. Dream as a basis of my soul life or anyone's soul life, but not in a conscious way. And soul, not permanent or separate, but enfolded firmly within its own truth. And again, this Sambhogakaya realm, a synthesizing power poised between mind, spirit, and body, the marrow of the middle way, inviting all into the adventure with the poetic basis of inspiration, cultivating an ability to dream well. And I was an art student in the 1990s at Rutgers University Mason Gross School of the Arts in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And I did a certain kind of imagery, and the school was really very focused, and not just the school, but the artwork and art, the art environment, I mean, was very focused on political and socially informed art, and focused on the realm of the seen. And actually 94% of the world, not only inwardly, but outwardly as well, is unseen and in some ways not even knowable. So the trajectory of being an artist, a journey I believe I was born into, my receptivity to powerful and difficult imagery, and no question, it just wouldn't give if I didn't pay attention, as innate and awakened and oddly kept alive through events that took place in my home. Rutgers was conceptual in its orientation, and I experienced, and I am nice here, I said some resistance, but it wasn't just some resistance to my imagery and how I approached my life as, and this was a good thing, as I was forced to focus on the power and value of these images, what they held for me, how painting or writing them was not a choice, as nothing else would do. So in regard to Dogen and Zen meditation and study, the desire to foster compassion and wisdom as a deepening of our natural inclination, concurrent in some capacity with creative practice, moment by moment we craft this life, day to day we give this true nature, or this true nature becomes a body or takes on body. And I will say also that in the class that I cultivated and gave people an opportunity to enter into the realm of archetypes through dreams, poetic reverie, and practice. So I did these specifically in practice environments, and I felt that people who practice, have a better inroad or a better opportunity to understand shadow realms and the creative life better than people who are working in the art world themselves, or the art world as it is set today. And I'd like to say here that there's no special ability needed here, and there is no lack of gifts. More likely, there is a lack of appreciation for our gifts, and any gift is noticing what our gifts are and the willingness to cultivate them. And the world's gifts, all the world, and we ourselves take part in universal themes and patterns, innate powers that motivate, challenge, and nourish. Dreams. Dreams, I can't fathom their portent, this flowing on of images. She speaks in the language of flowers and sings a flower song to sing the petals of strange roses. Oh, eyes of night flow into the dawn. Her face, the darkness carries forth, opening wide the journey. Again and again, our story begins. So in a dream, expressing the dream, in a forest is a woman embedded in a tree. Its roots, her mind, and branches are her hair. The dark hollow, the belly, a matrix filled with seeds. She dreams the earth, its color, its faith, its memory. She dreams the sky, its open space, its blue. The knots and hollows contain her silence and her mystery. However, the woman was so much a part of the tree, she was unable to walk or dance. And although she was a being of great and ancient beauty, yet there was no light for her beauty to be seen. And two conscience, two aspects of her life, the young and the old and the new, and trust. When things press from within, how shall I read them? If I have faith, what, where, how is this faith? A woman comes into my dream. She puts her head upon my lap. I stroke her short, black, pencil straight hair. I tell her it is all right. This labyrinth, seemingly out of nowhere, out of an apparent nowhere, a life becomes day by day a work, our vow a promise. The eye, the ear opens wider to ask where we are most at home. And I want to say that there isn't a war between imagination and the everyday world of writing checks and doing laundry. It really is more how I approach and the dipping into this imaginative realm to continually be able to renew this approach. How do I turn toward the things of the world, reach for a larger experience of the world, enter into the interiority of things so they become my own? Is it a garden of paradise or moving through buried and secret memory? Is it being with our children or the plainness of a hidden corner, a narrow corridor, a chest of drawers, a candle, an old and ancient oak? Perhaps it is about a life spent talking with the trees, the rain, and the mountains. And these discordant, invisible voices settle in our belly, lodge in the heart, or push us from behind. And we learn to listen better. The half and quarter moon smiling, her slender crescent facing upwards. We enter this middle ground, the Sambhoga Kaya realm, one face turning toward the world and one face turning back toward eternity. And another word for the Sambhoga Kaya is enjoyment and also the reward body. And I have experienced this actually in my own practice that it really makes the difference when you see, you know, that it is not two. And whatever I'm going through, there is always this potential and possibility. You know, I'm not stuck. Okay. Yet at times, something in us wants to say no, sometimes with good reason. At times, we are in the way. We learn to move ourselves out of the way. We learn to say yes, a wholehearted yes. Yes to the life I am again and again. Yes to whatever this life may bring. And the middle way, our adventure into the inner story and finding freshness of mind. And this third thing arising, like the 10,000 beautiful things of our world, as the many faces of the soul. And it's interesting about Zen centers too, because when we went on the pilgrimage, you know, Zen centers have a plane, but they are beautiful. All of the spaces are beautifully designed. And even city centers bring in aspects of nature and beauty itself as an aspect of imagination that draws us toward things and an appreciation of things and our life. So another way to look. We have not been born into a world of stories, united collectively through a shared vision. And what is the value of stories? We need to begin anew to find our story. We're not a traditional culture, and it isn't given. So, you know, our own life and our own story becomes really paramount, you know, in this quest, a story that is a virgin, suggested, working from the inside out, less known and in uncertain, undiscovered ways our own. And our own lives are the thing that we begin with and that we know the best. All beings have their stories, not a linear progression to a predestined ending, but a labyrinth of connections, connections to our great roots memory, a genuine history. And I wish to make tribute through images and words that evoke the mystery, to give body to the myth world, the magical and imaginative potential of a cosmos. And even the breath can be felt as magical and numinous. And it's with you all the time. Anything that you're doing, you can connect here. Images and stories embedded in the psyche, the very structure of consciousness. And I'd like to encourage people to listen more thoughtfully, to see, to hear within the ordinary events of our days, the quiet intuitions of our universe. Now, a great old tree is a majestic being. Its green leaves shimmer, its bark sepia, gray, black, and flowing, her roots deepening into fresh new loam. But there were none to see these things, no light for her beauty to be seen. An archetype, an interlude into stone. And I think I explain pretty well what archetypes are. Sometimes I do a lot of things and I spend a lot of time in solitary and alone. And I just imagine that sometimes people will say, what is an archetype? And I see them as underlying patterns, and they are patterns that emerge from all of the, not just our own lives, but, you know, maybe even thousands, maybe even more kalpas, you know, of having lived together, and not just human beings, but all sentient beings. And they also are enthusiasms, and they are powers, not just within our own breasts, but also powers outside us. And the closest I can think is Kanzian. There's a little Kanzian in the library, and she has 11 heads, and she has, well, I didn't count how many arms, but 1,000 arms for Kanzian, and an eye with each, in each hand. And I can say, well, I know that. I mean, that's she is an archetype for compassion, but compassion as something that is innate to us, something that we can cultivate, but we don't really acquire this. But it's not a metaphor, you know, oh, I know that, a hand and an eye. It means this. It actually, through our experience of living the practice, that Kanzian becomes real and beautiful. The statue itself is beautiful because of how I live these things and know them through my living. And archetypes could be compared to DNA, but DNA is really hard to have a love affair with. And archetypes, you know what I mean? It's more manifest and creative and something personal, you know, an image. And an image is something I can say welcome and hello to. And DNA, you know, it's interesting, but okay. So the archetypal fantasy within the tale or poem is not literal, yet profoundly real. So it's real in another way. The vision happening years before a poem, a group of paintings, or a change or turn in my life to express a seeking to express a particular way of seeing, a first utterance like a premonition. The core suggested is always right here, constant and continuous, vital and active, albeit unconscious, like the Buddha always present, reciting the sutras. And the creative work begins as a continuous movement inward. And for me, the creative process is inward. It is also outward as well, but you really do need the inner connection, making these inner connections for the creativity to become active and real in your practice. For me, opening into a below, a beneath, re-entering the Gordian knot, and a Gordian knot is the knot of the whole cosmos, not unlike the knot of your karma, unraveling, becoming undone, a slow cleansing of what we might term self or center. And it's good to think about, when I think about how I am a self, what is it that I am really looking to cleanse, you know, in terms of this self. James Hillman, the great archetypal psychologist, described the working of dreams as the removal of certain elements and factors out of life, so out of the day-to-day, giving them soul value, so giving them an inner value, an inner importance, like an inner vibration and reality. And this entails a movement away from the world, a death making, because your dreams also have that idea of helping you forget, you know, all of the people and events, I mean, that we tend to cling to. A movement off center into the wilderness, away from a merely human-centered view. And because I can always be happy, and I can always be happy no matter what is happening around me, and that it's bigger than merely the day-to-day conventional world, especially, and bigger than the human view. So this is not a movement away from compassion or care. The angel of wisdom, the angel of compassion, is an image lived and resonant, complex and vital. She is singing in the distance. Can you hear her? So recognition day by day that revealing itself through karma, it is an assimilation of inner events distilled through time, the timeless, and language. Twisted, discordant blurring of edges, a slow and continuous inward turning. And I have experienced this problem that was my Buddha world and my Buddha work as being a lifetime of care and a lifetime of disentangling and exploring. We do not realize how provocative and primal these intimations of our depth are. Our fear clothed in old memory, the discarding and shedding, and of this memory, rooted in all beings, devoted to all things as myself, moving with all beings, and even in the most ordinary circumstance, our reaching unfolds in unanticipated ways. Images as a poetic basis for language. So image as a whole complex, again, it doesn't stand for something else. It is in itself this whole impossibility or a possibility, encompassing language in the broadest sense, which includes visual, words, gesture, ritual, color, a silent pressing of our interiority into tasks. To seek a new language is needed to assimilate the uncertainty of our times and of our lives, to lose our ground by opening, falling through the gaps and chasms, through new ways of thinking and feeling, images felt as an interior seeing, primal and original, and to be at peace and breathe easy, we know we have come home. It's very important to make connections, you know, in this traveling around, because, you know, we really can't go back and we can't fix anything that happens, but we can move forward. And in the moving forward, you know, it's kind of circling back around, and we touch again the roots of, you know, kind of recognition and the roots that informs this practice, and informed actually this practice when it first began, when it was close to the Tao. And it is the same practice actually that I am involved with today. So all of these connections, this recognition, when I begin to know that I know, in the beginning, it's, you know, it kind of very general and bits and pieces, but I have experienced it later in the practice. I begin to have a recognition and an acknowledging that there's actually something, something to know that I actually know, to love and enjoy and be okay with what was felt very questionable earlier on. So stones. In my hand, a stone evokes a physical beauty. In dreams, a magic presence. First born of the sea, unstable like fire flowing. Stones are alive, they radiate outward from dark primal centers invisible to the eye. Inhabiting forest, hills, and streams, mosses grow upon them, and large rocks by the seaside gather as community, harboring seeds, sea pods, and small creatures in their crevices and hollows. Adorned in reds and striated ochres, stones lie at the bottom of streams as pure beauty, smooth and slippery, embedding in the sand like jewels. Animals and plants impress themselves on the surface of the stone, imprinting their shadow in form, in time, a symbiotic unity. The stone is cool, hard, and enduring earth, like bone and shell, moving to a slower rhythm. A stone is hot and molten. Stones have current and ebb and flow. Stones are quietly dreaming. Living the dream, interlude, story woman, myth woman. Most of us have not learned faith. We don't live in a world of faith. We can see ourselves as hapless, dependent on luck or opportunity, rare talent, power dynamics, who's to blame or in control. We come to religious centers to absorb and realize teachings and practices not directly integrated or shared with the world we live in. So an expression of native vision, even aspects of kindness and compassion, can feel out of place in environments geared to standard efficiency and policy. Great doubt, great faith, groundless, soft belly up. Every circumstance has and is potential, a first memory, a repetition of an original memory, depth and dark, vulnerable and tremulous, step by step, our potential to realize an inner truth, our original promise made manifest. And moon like an eye, white, luminous, opens wide, hangs like a piece of the sky, like eyes large, cat-like, snake-like, sun-like, me-like, where the tree roots reach into black coal, dirty, dusty, underground, beneath, absorbed, lost, and or bleeding, embracing a whole world, invisibly resonant and light. And a serpent curled, asleep within the hollow, he is verdant, moist, newborn, a rare jewel of the forest. He rests his body, still and present. He too is dreaming. And to live our dream, our life imagined through a story, healing as imagination, image in the way of deepening truth. Myths embrace multiple impossibilities, our being here right now of the many layers and perspectives with which we shall participate. An imagery in my own work is generated from within, and it is imaginal and mythical, mythical as, again, not literal, but it has a deep truth, these stories, a different kind of truth than the newspaper. Okay, and the newspaper doesn't, open me up and excite me. Well, it could, so maybe for some of you, it doesn't excite me all the time. So these works are an expression of vow, an interior quest, and deeply personal myth. So I have worked very personal. Again, we don't have a traditional myth of which we are given. And the practice always is personal, but I think for us, the personal aspect of it, is even deeper and more important. How is this, universe expressing itself very particularly through me? I became an artist out of profound need to express imagery and ideas integral to my life and experience, but also out of a love of beauty, how it is rooted in sacred forms and tradition. And as a young child, I suffered a serious illness, which brought out a series of ink drawings, an expression of raw vision I believed to be imprinted within me. And years ago, when asked by a friend, how did I know what to do? How did I know which way to go? Struggling and fumbling with all of these things. And I said that I followed an image, and that's a crazy thing to say, but the image saved. Years later, charcoal drawings emerged inspired by my introduction to African dance and ritual performance. Working alone in the 90s, I found my connection to the feminine. I wrote poetry and created paintings and prints that spoke to my kinship with nature and the elements. And this was an opening of the heart, trees, stones, and the moon. And they became my ancestral teachers and encouraged a search for a formal relationship with a spiritual tradition. And I already had some connection through a therapist that didn't work out, and the only one I ever was willing to have, and also my painting. I read spiritual texts, immersed myself in fairy tales and again mythologies, because within and all around us is a vital matrix revealing color, sound, and our capacity to dream. These images sustain us because their depth and perception resonate with a profound sense of what is real. And I have stayed close and true For to what for me has been most difficult, and I stayed close and true to this vision that I had, which wasn't so easy. It made a lot of demands. And the importance of this is in the difficulty, and the difficulty as a direction and substance of your life, something that you are wed to. And what is the reason that in meditation I learned to stay and I learned to wait? And because, you know, there's this tendency in all of us to clamp down on one particular way of looking. And a desire, I think, either to always see myself as wrong or always see myself as right. And when I learn slowly through meditation, through practice, to wait and to stay, I allow the difficulty itself to unfold and come back to me. Sometimes it moves on if it's not something I'm too invested in, but the more my investment, that negativity that creates a resistance, you know, the more the letting go will open up back to me. And I see the world in a very different way if I allow difficulties to speak to me and give them a chance, you know, rather than deciding that this shouldn't be, and or siding with my opinion of my own life or who this other person is. And this is really very, very important. So a lot of the work that I did was really paying homage to, really recognizing and being with the joys of my life. The work itself had its joys, but also the difficulties, and really being wed to these difficulties and okay with them, letting them teach me, giving them a chance. I mean, so these images sustain us because their depth and perception resonate with a profound sense of what is real. And it's not difficult because I'm a victim, and because poor me, in some ways, you know, it is just the quality of what our lives are. And, you know, we depend on this to come to full awakening or to give truth to the expression of our lives. And so I have stayed close and true to what for me has been most difficult. And these words are exemplary for how I have lived my life and worked, and how I work to create a language for these images. What arises unbidden within us, moments of utmost importance, working to clarify these moments of the soul, twisted, slow, it rise and rest, images like persons, they erupt, they rattle this self. And the more insight we gain into ourselves, into emptiness, kind of becomes very, very small but potent, the more it can rattle and yet nevertheless heals. So a moment forward, yet entrenched in what we are terming the infinite, not an established past, but through unknowing and always touching the many possibilities. I mean, so not, I don't know why we do this. To this day, you know, you can still be confronted with habit energy and do the same dumb thing in your head, at least. So just waiting, staying, and giving it all a chance. So strengthening that muscle to be able to stay back and not react, and allowing that difficulty to show you its many, many different sides and potentials for your life and for the life around you. So our quest for ancestral connections as an inner relationship with the ancestry of seeds, like the tree, it grows deep, its rings expansive from the inside out. The forest sees through invisible eyes with which its leaves and branches spread. And we as well, arms outstretched wide, we inwardly reach. Practice itself, what we call awakening, cultivates flexibility and fresh occasions. The vision can be sensory and concrete, or dark and fabulous, both open to the imaginal. So anything we love, anything we like to do, you know, when we kind of release our opinions about it, can serve us and nourish us in this way. It is not literal, or single in meaning. So when we take things too literally, and there's a place for literalism, the stop sign, we know to stop or we'll get a ticket. But that's not the same when we're navigating our lives. It is an image, language of texture, pebbles, seeds, blood, belly, and bone, of water and owls, tortoises, deities, satyrs, and dragons, fire and demons, a white oak, a dog, and the mountains of various in and outscapes. And none of these things is merely what it is, because, you know, there's a shift, you know, in what I'm experiencing. So things are, in a way, more than what they are. And it depends on the character of the thing and also my relationship to the thing. So there isn't any static veil over things as it is, you know, depends on this constant kinships and aversions and coming to peace. Our relationship with the 10,000 beautiful things depends on the quality of imagination, each event or being a doorway open into beauty, pattern, the invisible of mystery and origin, not origin like when did something begin, origin as prayer, as a vow, and the inner spark, the metaphor as personal. We are thoroughly involved in this risk of connection, myth as a way of seeing, stories opening into stories, images dark and fabulous as nature, as our nature, stories simple yet profound, suggestive and fertile, able to support diverse perspectives, multiple layers of change and shifting meanings. The archetypes as expressions of value, reflecting back both the great and small themes. They encourage our enthusiasm. And again, James Hillman, the great archetypal psychologist, speaks of instinct as a metaphor and that its original sense meant to see. Imagination as primary and my seeing. Henry Corbin, the Islamic philosopher and mystic, speaks to tawil. And tawil in Islam, a term related to the inner journey, to cause to return, to lead back, to restore to one's origin. So again, all of these connections, because this is actually what we do, what I have been doing, or what you all are doing. The voice of the image is one's own voice. In the practice of meditation, of the deep work of the psyche, we do turn the mind back. We do not know, and yet we do return, and transformation takes place. Interlude, myth woman, story woman, voiceless, so gently rocking in the cradle of the breath, her grief absorbed by the night's loam. Drawn into the earth, drawn down. She swallows whole, pebbles, seeds, bones, the branches and roots, embraced peaceably at the hearth in the bowels of the earth. The goodness of poetry is to be with the 10,000 things. And one night, the woman in the tree looked up at the moon and said, "O moon, eye of the night, sing your sweet music, share with me your light." "Yes, dear woman," replied the moon, "I shall share with you my light." Ring upon ring, her thread reweaves new life into the circulation of things. Death unfolds her rich jeweled green. Tree woman, half a woman, half a tree. Her vines coil, thorny, slowly moving. Her loam thick, rich, wet, and black. Her life is a fiery furnace. A belly of bellies. And finding voice, interlude with the owl. And the serpent out of his own body produced a stream, one warm, one cold. Two serpents out of no place arise. Two serpents each produced out of their own body a stream, one warm, one cold. And that was how they spoke out of the dream, how spirits of the water hear. They listen with great attention. They whisper, then act to cleanse the distress of the dawn. the forest, the old oak, the woman in the tree, the newly born green serpent bathed in the voices of the dead, which now brings happiness. And this is how the spirits of the water hear. They perk up their inner ears to listen. They whisper. This is how the spirit of serpents here arise spontaneously in the forest of the 10,000 beautiful things. And I'm walking in the woods, my footprints firm, a single act of stepping sounds, one foot after the other, speaks as the motion of my walking, feet firmly moving, yet firmly placed. The hard, dark soil, the dry leaves crackle to relieve the anguish of the forest, a dark, hungry space in the forest brings forth all beings with blessings they gather. So finding voice, expressing voice, even this particular word voice stimulates, and I move to imagine. I hear particular voices rustling in the wind on my walks, in the midst of my work, lodged in the heart as original memory, a cacophony of voices, eyes, the ears, the many hollows like mouths of the forest, surrounded by leaves, barks, and roots of trees, they sing. And to spark the imagination, the expression of otherness is greater than self-expression. So this imaginal touches deeply into something more that we practice with here. So it is both of these things together, a greater than the unreflecting mouthing of conventional views and the totality of the 10,000 beautiful things, the whole spiritual journey seen as a struggle to find one's voice, to give language for my experience and how things change even ever so slightly through my practice, deep and interpenetrating archaic value expressed through the person, a personal factor that includes, in a centered and powerful way as myself, the expression of Buddha, the Buddha speaks, and the 10,000 beautiful things. And without voice, especially in a culture and especially in our culture, and you can look around to see, without voice, we easily become a victim of circumstance. So without my own knowing in a way, but a deep knowing. This is my homage to the work of the Bodhisattva Samantabhadra, loving activity in the world. And in the Lotus Sutra and the Avatamsaka, he is a protector of beings who study, recite, and actualize the teachings. Samantabhadra, the main protagonist in the Avatamsaka, a bodhisattva of practice, protector of the sutra, as well as those who are devoted to the practice. He is a source of vows. And I personally experienced, because everyday life was such a challenge for me, experienced Samantabhadra as my wounded bodhisattva, learning about myself in relation to the world I live in, which was somewhat troubled and painstaking, yet stimulating and needful, an important aspect of my practice. However, so much of what I'm learning now, what I glean from the arts, poems, stories, and scriptures, grounded, clear-eyed, authentic, and able to function, and the able to function, that's more important than you would imagine, what has brought me great happiness, that which I would not have found had I not been moved as an artist by the Sambhoga Kaya realm. Interlude, Owl. Owl perches among sundry branches, he who is the nature of trees, owl who is the nature of the hollow, who sings the forest in somber tone, owl with eyes adept, golden, piercing, he listens, intense, attuned, ear holes honed over aeons toward his prey, wings spread, impossibly bright, silent, expansive, they glide with talons he grips, myth like a seed, the dark night, dark, unfathomable. How did Owl begin? How did he find his way? How does Owl turn his mind, turning his head more than halfway about, His feathered body makes the dream. He desires his whole way around. In order to step away from the world, we are invited to enter. Enter among the bodhisattvas, enter among the Tathagatas, enter into the worlds, enter into kalpas. We enter into the story. We enter our own story. And why should we need this subtle stepping aside from the world in order to know the world, in order to know ourselves? Into the Greek and Renaissance philosopher, archetypes reveal origins or a model. In ceremonies and ritual, the archetype functions as the way of the mystery and following the way of the ancients. Archetypes can be expressed through images arising out of elemental substances such as water, fire, air, flow, and space, attractions and aversions, how our lives are shaped through the character of a particular element. An element penetrates, informing our being. For Carl Jung, archetypes are deep instinctual patterns at the root of our being. The power of the archetype is numinous, suggestive. It hints and alludes and can never be thoroughly known. The archetypes are living powers of the cosmos and not man-made. And the archetype is not permanent, even though at times it is referred to as an immutable idea, as with the divine names. Elemental and primal, it is independent yet constantly changing through interrelationships. Archetypes take us out of the limited space of brute and merely personal reality, enlarging the perspective, giving us back our lives. So anything, any predicament, you know, this sense of openness and potential can open us back up no matter what's happening. In our night dreams, though they can be, they are appreciated and important, but we ourselves in a night dream are kind of done to. And in poems and reverie, it is a daylight imagination where we are invited to participate. And both are important. Evil dreams are really helpful, you know, if you keep working with them. So an unresolved yearning infused with the sorrow of the world, a mist which permeates, a woman in the tree, her deep and radical kindness, the hollow of the oak, a womb through which she is reborn, to mourn all frayed, unblossomed beauty. Rites of passage remain untrammeled. This great oak with roots invisibly deep, a crooked back woman bent low, bowed down. She who wanders aimless now, names a sacred tree. And to discover the key, for that aspect of your life which teaches and yet has held you back. So even the being held back, if you're practicing, has its value in our questions, in our struggle. It also has value in the crucial moments when the world rushes in its particular way, so difficult for you, you're able to stay, to take the backward step, to take the next step, one foot firmly in front of the other, with care, with great faith. And I end with interlude. Tree woman walks the path of bones. Tree woman walks the path of bones. She experiences the earth as an image of this body, envisioning a root moving through the body, this root imagination alive in the body, a fleshy network filled with invisible connections, this body an inscape, a vast multicolored land amid clustery thorns and gnarly roots. An old woman retains the songs. She carries them, remembers, and holds them close. So that's all. And I was afraid to look at the time because it's another thing I'm not very good at, but there's a few minutes and I apologize, but I can be around if people have questions or comments. Okay. All right. No.
All right, I will pass around the mic if anyone has a question. And actually, I would be willing to begin. This is Charlie.
Okay, you are Charlie.
Yes.
Okay.
What dreams during the night or the day sort of reveal to me are often a intention or desire or impulse of mine. And especially when those things come true, I see the underlying desire or impulse I had. And that's both sort of concerning because sometimes something I wanted happens and it feels like shallow wanting. And other times it feels like a very deep impulse. And I'm curious in noticing a deep impulse or desire from dreaming during the night or day, where do you go next after that recognition?
You just take the next step, and you can't really say where is a recognition, because the dream kind of may be pointing to something other than what you think it's pointing to. I find there's a habit in dreams that I wake up and there's a difficult image, and the tendency is to superimpose on the dream the very thing that brings about the difficulty in the dream to begin with. So I think that there's a long period of time of practice and looking within and looking at dreams before we have any certainty of at all of what a dream is pointing to or not pointing to. I don't think dreams have any plan in mind. They're not just anything, but they're open and suggestive. And a lot of it depends on what I'm looking to do and how I am moving forward. So it's kind of like looking at dream dictionaries or something, but whatever clicks with you, and you can feel the difference between a positive sense of something clicking and the negative sense of my usual disturbed and inner tendency to be afraid or to be angry, or those two tendencies, and what shall I do about that? They really do, in some way, point you to your life, but they won't really tell you what to do. That's still up to you. So.
Thank you.
On Zoom, we have Sokuchu, who said, "Thank you, Shanae, for your beautiful talk. I feel inspired by the imagery you've offered and by your encouragement to explore deeply through dreams and imagery. Thank you, too, for the phrase, 'Give difficulties a chance.'"
Yeah, a major thing, actually, and one of the things that most of us, could be better at. At least, thank you. I can't see you. You're probably somewhere there, So, okay, all right. Okay, all right. Thank you. 11:27. Thank you very much.